September 7, 2020, it's the Watch for Pedro show. for Pedro show. Happy Labor Day, people. Happy Monday. And Brother Matt, of course, you know, love Grotto on the pleasure point because we're quite in quarantino mode still. That's why I'm not on the parade. In fact, I'm celebrating by doing the show here. But I'm not totally man alone either because those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype software, we got Carl Evangelista with me. Hey, Carl, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Now, people, he was on 26, 27 months ago, so he's... But it ain't an I Love Lucy rerun because in the meantime, Carl's cooked up a whole fucking album. But we started off the show with John Coltrane doing Walking. I mean, and this one here's got Whitney Kelly and Paul Chambers. You know, he wrote a song called Mr. PC. You know you're playing bass good if John Coltrane writes you a fucking song. I mean, the same with guitar people, too. Carl, you might relate to this. On Bitches Brew, there's a tune called John McLaughlin, right?
John McLaughlin, yeah.
I mean, you know, interesting about John. You know, I saw him on the Vista Orchestra, the one with Jan Hammer and Rick Laird and Jerry Goodman and Billy Cobham.
Yeah.
I think it was called Birds of Fire, the album. And But I went back further in his thing. He did session work. You wouldn't think of that, right?
He was on this acoustic jazz record with Jack Bruce. I remember.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, he was on shit like Sunshine Superman. And I mean, you know what I mean? He's a session guy like Jimmy Page, Paul Jones, that kind of stuff. But, yeah. Jack Bruce, not such a side man in those days. But John McLaughlin came up through those, you wouldn't think so. And, you know, by the time I saw him, he's playing like 12-string electric guitar through a fuzz tone.
Right.
He used really thick picks, somebody told me, too. Like fucking half-inch thick, and they looked like houses. It looked like a Monopoly house.
I didn't know that. A lot of those guys who are really invested in speed picking, they use pretty thin gauge. So that's crazy.
You know, the thinnest pick was Bob Mould, man. It was like a piece of paper. But, Billy Gibbons, ZZ Top, right? Peso. I think he files it up and shit. It ain't exactly out of your pocket, but yeah, piece of metal, huh? So I heard that it was like kind of like with mouthpieces, like with John Coltrane. You know, in those days, you'd get blanks. This is what Brother Steve McKay in the Stooges told me. So you'd have to cut your own. And John Coltrane would cut his so fucking thick, you know, most people couldn't get a note out. Like James Jamerson, right? He played with really high action.
Right.
Maybe there's something about that, you know, the guys that really play. I don't know if you've ever tried to play guitar with low action. One time a neck got broke, so somebody handed me a bass, and the action was so fucking low, I couldn't play it. You know what I mean?
I'm a big high action guy. I'd heard that, well, because I was invested in a Cream really early on, I heard Clapton used high action, but he used thin gauge strings. And I use really thick gauge strings. And later on, I discovered Sonny Chirac did that too. He had high action and thick gauge strings. So I just kind of stuck with it.
I heard thick gauge strings easier to stay in tune.
Yeah. That's what huge intonation thing.
Because I think D Boom went up to like 12s or some shit because to try to hold the tune in.
Yeah. I use a wound third too, which is, that means like you can, there's still vibrato on the third string, but you can't bend it as easily. So.
Okay, that's interesting. But strings, you know, they're particular. Bass maybe not so much, but I know with guitars, big time. You know, if you get too weird with different kinds of bass, yeah, you break when you don't know where to get another one.
Yeah.
So stick with the 45 to 105. But enough about Watt, you know. Let's talk, in the 26 months since we last talked, you cooked up this record. Let me ask you first. Is any of this shit from the old days? Was it all cooked up for this?
So the back part of this, the digital version of the record, has a bunch of transitional songs from maybe, I want to say when we were touring the last record, 2018, but most of this is really recent, as in it was finished after lockdown. So a lot of the music is really new, and it's been informed by a lot of the things that have happened in the past several months. So, yeah.
So when you say digital, you mean there's different versions of this album that have more shit than other versions?
Well, the vinyl couldn't fit
those extra songs,
and the vinyl's kind of the record. The other tracks are kind of bonus, I would say.
Oh, okay, yeah, like when they made CD versions of albums, you get this extra stuff.
Right.
And you probably have a Bandcamp page, right? So all this can be digitally, too.
Yeah, we're up on Grex, grex.bandcamp.com.
Okay. Yeah, people, I should say that the name of his band is actually Grex, not Carl Evangelista. But he's the shot caller. What's the name from?
So my partner, my bandmate, she named the group. It's supposed to be the name of a slime mold. It's
That's
a
right.
biological concept. A bunch of smaller organisms come together to create a larger organism.
Right, right. A kind of collective. Huh? Yeah, we talked about this last time because now I remember because I got a buddy up in the city from Minutemen days named Grux.
Right, yeah.
And he's got a band called Rainbow Carolina. Well, you know, there's always different parts and parts, but it's always got Rainbow Carolina in there somewhere. And a pretty wacky, crazy, almost theatrical chaos kind of band. And then
it's really cool stuff.
Oh, so you know about it. Okay.
Yeah, I guess I'm not supposed to say anything. I think the personnel of Carolina is supposed to be a secret.
That's right, they are.
Yeah.
I think the only cat we're supposed to know is Grux.
Right, so I'm not going to say anything.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, one time we played with them, they had a guy dressed like the Beastie Boys, and he flipped on his back, and this is like the first tune, he flips his back and wails down his pants, he fires a big old fucking dildo out of his yang, and I go to D-Boom, I said, man, how are we going to follow that up?
That's way out there, man.
That's called, like, raising the bar, right? Okay, so you're saying, like, the tunes... The extra stuff is actually stuff that was before, and what you put on the album was stuff that was more recent?
Yeah, and that wasn't just a thematic choice. It's just the sound of the band has transitioned so fast in the past few years. That's what it made sense to put on the proper LP.
Ah, so you think the material, I mean, this is casting... shade on this, but you think like the whoa, are you still there, Carl?
Yeah, there was a dropout for a second. Can you say that again? Sorry.
Well, what I was going to say is you feel that the material should be appropriate for the cats you're playing with. So, like, if the cats change, then the material should change.
I mean, it has to. There was a lot of, like, because there are a lot of electronic components on this particular record, and that was done initially out of necessity, because we had to tour without a drummer for one summer, and then the music began to conform to that. Now we brought acoustic percussion back in, but we're trying to blend the acoustic percussion with the electronic instruments. Then COVID hit, so no more acoustic percussion. It's the circular process. Everything just has to conform.
You get the situation dictates. Here,
yeah.
I want to play Blood, huh?
I'm a slow learner, phone is burner. I'm alone on Sundays, share no Sundays, staring at the Sundays. Don't confess indoors before I hate Mondays. Okay, Garfield, spin your hot wheels. Boy ain't got hot meals, but father, there's the real deal. And all the dread I don't conceal, man, it helps some people. But give me something I can feel in the torture of my blood. Everyone's looking for something they can feel in the suffering of their blood. So how can there be overlords when everything is God? So how can there be overlords when everything is God? And every mother's son chasing events to the odd. Sorry I don't do that, I'm a slow learner. But every kernel's a word I nurture, like why we burner? Why's the sonship on fire? Why's the captain a liar? Whose mother on the funeral pyre? Read till I can't sleep, man. Sleep till I can't eat, man. Kick so I can feel, man, the torture in my blood. And everyone's looking for something they can feel in the suffering of their blood. So how can there be overlords when everything is God? So how can there be overlords when everything is God?
して私の虚像鼓動闇自由に勝って薄い肩をくるりと向けて鼓動闇自由に勝とうサウンドポートレートをすり抜け街あるよしを消毒飲んだ普通のガリカチをすり抜け飛びゆく私の足並みこの世界この世界この世界正義に向かうこの世界この世界この世界正義の足を日が朽ちて私のぐるり犬の死骸に言葉の残骸けれども私は惨めじゃないわ鼓動に自由に格好私は川辺で石を投げる投げた石は川と流れる川を流れて私を置き去りそして一つは今もそよいでいるこの世界、この世界、この世界、正義に戻く。この世界、この世界、この世界、正義に合う。
Come on. 3 minutes and we're rolling. So we need a 3 minute punk rock. Faster than that last fucking turn.
I belong to the Black Liberation.
Yeah.
Fever Show. That was Blood from Grex off the new album. What's the new album called?
Everything You Said Was Wrong.
Yes, Everything You Said Was Wrong. Yeah, there was an aphorism, everything you know is wrong. So that's kind of down that alley.
Huh.
Yeah, it's some kind of Buddha thing. And what do they call those, cones? A cone teaches this shit by not having an answer.
Huh.
Yeah, you're just supposed to fucking wonder about it, right? If you meet Buddha on the road, kill him. Okay, what the fuck's that mean? I don't know. Wonder about it. You'll get enlightened. Yeah, because there's this thing about, especially some Eastern stuff like Tao, if you talk about it too much, you start ruining it.
Right.
So somehow, you know, even though it's the way, don't talk about it. or you know, don't get so full of yourself. There's something about it. It's probably about humility. That we had Aunt Sally after that with the Day Decay. Tobacco. I think last tune, I played this whole album now, and it ain't out for another month. But it's great, man. It's called Hot, Wet, and Sassy. And this tune is a perfect shout. Mr. Tom and Tobacco. I'm really blown away by this fucking record. I wish I could play synth now. Kraftwerk when I was young a little bit, but man, especially this. But I probably will stay to bass. It's too much to, you know what I mean? You go upstream so long, it's like, oh, fuck, I got to start over.
No. You got a foothold on bass.
Yeah, I know, but like to let go of it and start on something else this far mid-string, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Carl, I can't even imagine going to five-string bass, let alone another machine. But
I mean, it's a different instrument, right?
It fucking is. And then if you ask me, it gets in the way of the kick drum. Because usually they put on a lower B string. Actually, the first one that Leo Fender made, he added a C, a higher one. Because he didn't want you running down the neck. It only had 14, 15 frets. He wanted you to crawl across the fretboard. Ain't that a trip?
That's true.
Yeah. You know, he's a piano player. He never played bass, but you owe him a lot. After that, we had Gaijin Sabetsu. Gaikoku, Haikoku, and that's Bogan Kaczynski, some more synthesizer. You're kind of getting this territory with the electron, you know, the idea of the sequencer, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, I mean, a lot of that, again, was born out of necessity, but it's the idea, like, none of our parts are really programmed. Like they were all performed and then sequenced after the fact, and I just kind of like the idea of these asymmetrical loops. I just think that's really interesting.
Yeah. Model Home collaborating with His Name Is Live with To Remember Dub, The Black Lodge with Soap Says, Wild Rats. It's something I did with Ronnie Thurst about 23 years ago for this Velvet Goldmine movie in the outtake called Stiff. Thorn Friends. Brand new album he's got, Satan Belfi. Reminds me of Andrea Belfi, the original I'll Sell You to My Nile drummer, man. Blank Generation live with This Is Television with Richard Hell in 1975.
Yeah.
And finally, Grex with Beepocalypse.
Beepocalypse.
Beepocalypse. Oh, okay. Yeah. Beepocalypse. It's like Apocalypse People, but with beep in the front. And your wife named it.
Yeah, it's she's an environmental, or I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, she's an environmental consultant, but that's the theme of that song. It's she's really sensitive to those issues in terms of environmental destruction, and she's worked a lot with bees, so the disappearance of bees is a big concern of hers.
Oh, so it's not beep like beep beep beep. It's bee.
B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bale. You know, supposedly they're the canary in the mine shaft, right?
Yeah, I wish she were on here because she knows this issue much more intimately than I do.
Well, I'm using this kind of, what do you call that, metaphor.
Right.
Like if you're losing your bees, there's something wrong with where you're living. That's what I meant. And how, you know, do issues inform you when you write music?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's after the last record. I mean, because we're living in Oakland, and Oakland is this sort of focal point of this classic focal point of protest. I mean, it's a little difficult to be numb to it because the Panthers started just you know, like 10 minutes drive away from where we are, from where we live. So you can't be numb to it, and the degree of inequity out here is so severe and has only worsened in the past several years. The way I describe this record is it's the sound of normal life just kind of reinserting itself in the music, because when your living situation is imperiled, and the living situation of your compatriots and the economic circumstances of the music, when everything is embattled, you just can't keep it out of the music. It just has to be in the music, you know.
You know, you said a scary word for me. Normal. By that, did you mean healthy?
No, absolutely not.
You're talking about the way it is, right? See, that's why that word scares me. Because I think some people think it means healthy or decent. It doesn't.
Absolutely
not. It's just the register of what's going on, right?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, I know you've had experience, and I know that you know a lot of people up here. Of course, your exploits are legendary everywhere, but I mean, in terms of, you know, a lot of musicians out here. I mean, you know Philip Greenleaf, right, the saxophone player?
Sure.
Yeah, I teach at a high school with him. I mean, we know, so it's like there are a lot of people who've been here for a really long time, like Grux, for example, who've managed to weather all of these storms, many of which happened well before I arrived on the scene, because, again, I'm from the Valley, but over 15 years I've been here at this point, we've had a lot of scene decimation. A lot of the people who came up with me are gone. We're one of the last bands. And it gives you this kind of fatalistic psychology about what you do, the fact that there's been so much attrition. And I guess I'm just experiencing what a lot of other musicians tend to experience in places that just get aggressively gentrified.
Carl, I heard some bad news. Verify this, because you're speaking of I shared a stage with that man. And now that pad is gone, Uptown.
Yeah, I actually just spoke to the owner. I mean, there's an email from her in my inbox that I haven't read just yet. But yeah, the Uptown is gone. I think the announcement was made Saturday. It's a huge loss.
Yeah, and the drummer man was Scott from Nels Klein Singer, Amendola.
Oh, that guy's a great friend.
Yeah, he's the one who brought him aboard, and how I got to share stage. And, in fact, it was Mike Baghetta's main steam stop valve. Those were both of my stops there, and, yeah, it breaks my heart. You know, because actually Oaktown didn't have a gig for a long time. And then I remember 57 Club, or something. It was a Vietnam restaurant that me and Kay did with Dose. And things started to happen. Yeah, something called the Swan. Or something. I'm talking 20 years ago, and slowly, and now back falling down again. Well, you said gentrification, but I think maybe some of it might be this acute situation with the COVID-19 also.
Yeah, I mean that's happening as well. There are a lot of venues up locally. I don't know how many permanent venue closures we've had, just because venues have been closing for the past decade.
Right.
But in Sacramento, I've been getting a lot of notices of small clubs closing for sure because of COVID.
Yeah, Brian McKenna. Yeah. But when you said gentrification, that was a problem way before COVID-19.
Oh, forever.
Yeah,
forever.
Right. And forever. Especially up in the city, and like somebody building a fucking condo right behind Ramona's place, Patera, bottom of the hill.
Right.
And those people, you know, they don't know that by the condo that, hey, there's been music here for 20 years.
Oh, man. Actually, bottom of the hill, like last time we played, which was maybe, I want to say January of last year, they were saying they were one of the few venues in the area that was still booking in-house.
Yeah.
They were still booking local groups.
Yeah.
That's a novelty now.
Yeah, same thing. You know, she's always been very independent, but they told me they were under threat because of this new condo that was just put up behind them. Now, this was a real industrial area for a long time.
Yeah. And oddly, a lot of those places are hugely undesirable just several years ago, and then now even the undesirable locations are becoming like these loci for new emigres, and the rents are insane.
Right. Especially for artists kind of situation, you know. See, they covet that kind of environment of creativity and stuff, but then they sterilize it with these kind of fucking behavior. I'm not going to call it policy because it's fucking bullshit. I mean, not to... trying to be fair about this. it makes me sick, Carl.
It's shifted over the bridge. I'd heard that I know some musicians living in studios near Lake Merritt, small studios, and those rents are about as expensive as one bedrooms were maybe 5 years ago.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, people, we don't want to get you totally bummed out. Happy Labor Day. It's the end of the first hour of September 7, 2020 edition Watt Peter Show. Special guest Carl Evangelista. Hold tight for hour two. September 7, 2020, second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
government's been reading my mail. They got my sister in the county jail, but I'm raising the money to go up bail. I got $17, I will not fail, but I'm worried about you. Hey, hey, honey, I'm worried about you. The things you do, when I'm telling you the truth, baby, I'm worried about you. Front door's locked, I ain't got no key, and honey, I'm so drunk, I can barely see. My own mother, she's got no use for me, and my wife's about to give me the third degree, but I'm worried about you. Hey, honey, I'm worried about you. The things you do, well, I'm telling you the truth, honey, I'm worried about you. Things look bad for me, I'll admit. It's mostly just people talking shit. Said, am I scared? No, not a bit. I rely on my good looks and my wits, but I'm worried about you. Oh, honey, I'm worried about you. Said, I'm worried about you and the crazy things you do. Honey, I'm worried about you. Said, honey, I'm worried about you.
Eyelashes are falling out one by one. Pink tarantulas. We experienced an understated turmoil. Chirp, dwell, earn. I'm drowning in honey. Evidence of future life forms. Marshmallow blooms in sleepy cul-de-sacs. Thought they saw a dagger in his side pocket, lit glint. I used to make a living playing air drums on YouTube. Has this department contributed to your personal and professional growth? Cortisol Valley. My husband grew up on Inspiration Drive. K-pop signature moves. Document your inner landings. How do we fold into each other? She memorized all suborbital flight patterns. Gemstone switch. Terrestrial marketplace. Trapped by our predictions. This will be the last time I use this sink.
Show. Started the second hour off with Greg's doing Walk and Eiler in Tarzana. And everybody out there, it's common knowledge, right? Tarzana is named after Edward Rice Burroughs, the guy who wrote Tarzan, right? Well, what do we call these things? Dingleberries over here? What do you call that? It's something that goes along with being human and maybe not too thorough when you're done taking a dump, right? Well, they call what we call dingleberries, they call Tarzanelli. Fucking Tarzan swinging on the fucking vines. Now, this is why you want to be in a band with two Italian guys, okay? Get to learn incredible knowledge like this. Thank you, Fratello Steve, Fratello Andrea, Fratello Paolo. Okay. Then we heard Sam Bennett over in Tokyo doing I'm Worried About You. Lewis Cole after that, Bank Account. Ma Shi Wen, she's up in the East Bay now. But she was, if you ever get this old New Alliance compilation, Mighty Feeble, she's on Turds in Space reading poetry. And here she is 40 years later reading poetry. This is just recently up there. Thought Log number 5. Log. You know, the captain's log. You know, I think of Star Trek, right?
Right.
Like in that joke, what did they find in the captain's head? The captain's log. Yeah, of course. terrible one. Okay, move on. Cal Portoros out of Slovenia with Kivi. Sproton Layer, Tidal Wave. That might have been Roger Miller when he was younger in Ann Arbor or something. Yeah, experimental. Soldier Dolls, What Do They Know? This is a Welsh band. These two guys went and saw the Minutemen the first time they played in England and recorded our gig and sent us, I guess the customs people X-rated because you couldn't hear shit, but we put it on our Fanatics, one of our tunes on there because it was like incredible. You know, there was a faint thing there. And then finally, Husk from Grex. And I was thinking of Husker. But it's Hooster. probably more of like the protective part of a seed, right?
Yeah, it was also about snakes.
Oh yeah, okay.
Snakes as an analog for depression.
They molt. They shed their skins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do cicadas. Ooh, kind of ugly looking. They call them semis in Japan. And, man, they sound like fucking power tools. I thought I was next to a construction site. And it was these fucking guys with their wings and their legs. Yeah. So, a song like Husk. It comes time to compose, do you have one kind of process or is there several?
It's all over the place. I mean, there were some songs back in when we started working together 10, 11 years ago where we were actually co-composing couplets. We were co-composing measure to measure. And then nowadays, sometimes one of us will bring in a complete composition. Someone will already have lyrics. This is actually a reworking of the song from a song from the last record, oddly, that we rearranged so we could perform it live.
Wow. So when you say couplets, you mean like call and response? Like you say a line and then it's answered back?
It got that intimate, that specific.
Yeah, me and D. Boone tried that up 5 or 6 songs.
No kidding.
Yeah, what songs? Stuff like the Big Lounge Scene and Bass King. There's several of them on the Beanspiel EP and Politics of Time. And they're really strange, yeah, because it's almost schizophrenic, right? It's two different people.
Right, yeah.
Right, but they're not, because we are responding on each other, but they are from different mouth holes. Yeah, that's trippy. I was wondering, do you ever come up with the title first?
I do sometimes. My bandmate, she is pretty against that for some reason. She refuses to name songs unless they're finished.
Yeah, Watt almost always has to start with a title.
Well, that's cool. I mean, it gives you a focal point, right?
Yeah, right, an anchor. Here, I want to play. The next two tunes I picked by you guys, both are names of people.
Thank you. Run away. like a fool, a fool in love I stay. I'm praying you save your love for me. I can feel it. Even when you're not near, can't conceal it. I love you, my dear. Even though I know no good can ever come from loving you, tell you I can't do a thing. Oh, I'm so in love with you. Help me, please. Mercy on a fool like me. I know damn well I'm lost, but still I plead. Darling, please save your love for me. I can feel you don't even have to be near. Can't conceal it. I love you, I love you, I love you, my dear. Even though I know no good can ever come from loving you, tell you I can't do a thing. Lord, I'm so in love with you. Oh, help me. Somebody help me, please. Lord, have mercy on a fool like me. I know damn well I'm lost, but still. Darling, please say your love for me. Oh, you may have fun running round with the crowd, hey, but for crying out loud, darling, please say. Just a little bit of your love for me.
now look to me, looking through my eyes, in the back of my mind. Everybody else, it's just a matter of working with what you already have. Free to breathe, more likely to see the truth about me. The truth about me. Free to breathe, more likely to see the truth about me. The truth about me. Matter filled with pointless banter, hollow broken laughter.
Thank you.
lot for Pedro. Started that chunk of music off with Grex doing Dave Durenko, which I'm going to take a guess here, but it might be the name of somebody, right?
It's the name of a stuffed animal who in turn I think was named after a man who was, and it's an anagram of sorts of Korean Dave, I believe.
Ah, okay. So it's kind of put together. And then we heard Bouchon with Fast and Steady Run, Betty LeVette, Save Your Love for Me. Thank you to the Verve people for sending me that out of nowhere. Have a Nice Life with Dan and Tim, Reunited by Fate. Man, you got a title like that, you got to hear it, right? Titles can be good. Bob Dylan wrote Propaganda Songs. It's probably better than any of the stuff in the song. You know, I'm waiting, you know, in third person. Anyway, it's terrible, but the title, I mean, which is the chorus. And then Steve Abercrombie with Truth About Me. And finally, another name, Margot Tannenbaum. Was this a character in the movie?
Oh, yeah, this was from the Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay. I guessed right there. Now both tunes I picked because I thought they were after people.
I guess one of them we sort of knew intimately, but yeah, people. It's people music, so.
Right, as opposed to bugs or kind of organisms that cling together.
Sure.
Where did you record this, Carl?
So we recorded most of the basic tracks at this the studio run by Miles Boysen, who was in the Splatter Trio a long time ago, with Gino Robert. But some after COVID hit, a lot of the inserts and overdubs were recorded actually just at our place. We had no choice. So all over the place, I'd say.
And how long you think? Total.
Like, how long was the recording process?
Yeah.
Well, we the earliest tracks were the earliest recordings were done in May of 2019. But the process, because we were kind of writing as we went along, the process got so long-winded that it ended maybe a year later. I want to say maybe May 2020, because we were finishing the stuff in our house. And it was long enough that we wound up revising some of the lyrics. Some of them got more aggressively political. And we met Milford Graves, the drummer, who we just ran a fundraiser for. We met him last year, and then one of the songs used a version of a drum pattern he showed us.
Oh,
so it's all very recent.
Now, did you mix it as you went along? Did you mix it as you went along, or did you like mix it one piece at a time?
No.
I phrased that shitty, Carl. Did you mix it one time along, or did you wait till the end and then mix it all together?
We waited until the end, but every time we mixed it, we just said to ourselves we want to make it a little bit noisier.
Also, many revisions.
Many revisions.
But you know, that's one of the bitching things about doing it at home.
Oh, yeah, you can take your time. That's huge.
Yeah.
I actually vastly prefer that. Although, sometimes getting this intuitive... this intuitive process underway and having everything mixed inside of, you know, a handful of hours, sometimes that can yield a product that's really interesting. It's just I like being able to work over a long period of time.
You mean you're saying like it enforces a certain kind of focus?
Yeah, it's just I'd heard when recording the classic Blue Note records, Rudy Van Gelder was live mixing. That's why if you listen Out to Lunch, Bobby Hutcherson's vibes are overloading and you can actually hear him pull down the fader. Like, I think that's really cool because that becomes part of the record. But, you know.
More of a document. And it's funny, too, because Charlie Mingus's big complaint about Rudy Van Gelder, he changes your sound.
Oh, for sure. I've heard a lot of people, actually, piano players complaining, like, about, because he editorializes it a bit. But that's part of, I think, what makes those albums special.
Yeah, look, he's in on the fucking dealio. He's the other band member, okay? You know what the other trip is? For a long time, it was his fucking parents' living room.
Yeah, that's crazy. And he's so secretive, or I guess he was, so secretive about his mic setup. Like, people still don't know what his mic setup was.
It was the lady secretary, right? She's the only one who knew.
Yeah.
People were at the end of the second hour, September 7, 2020. Lock Peter, so special guest, and also big into it, kind of getting into this Rudy Van Gelder thing. Well, Devon, think! September 7, 2020, it's the third hour of the Lock from Pedro show.
Chance or just a
Pivo show. Start off the third hour with Gretsch doing The Other Mouses. Yeah, I mean, that title intrigued me. I mean, what is it? When it comes to your tunes, do you like to talk about them, or are you like, hey, what? That's why I fucking wrote them in the first place. I don't want to talk about them. That's what I play them.
I wish this is a minor tangent, but I'm teaching this. I'm teaching a course basically on like free jazz and politics at SFSU right now, and I've been reading this interview that John Coltrane had with Frank Kosky, and Kosky's, you know, this like avowed Marxist author, and he's trying to get Coltrane's opinion on all these political moments of the day, like what do you think of Malcolm X, you know, what do you think of the way that race impacts how free improvisation has progressed and all these things. And Coltrane just talks in these really big universalist terms, because that was his whole deal.
But, you know, that in fact is the last interview he did, and it was in a parking lot, and he drove him in his station wagon. It was very strange.
In a car.
In a station wagon, that's because there's no vans yet. That's what they toured in, and he liked country squires. Now, I got to tell you, though, about the Malcolm X, he actually went and saw him talk.
He went and saw him talk, yeah.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Well, I think it's an indicative of John Coltrane being kind of open-minded and wanting to see what the guy had to say.
I think his head was in there for sure. And he was...
he didn't say he went to see him twice. He only saw him to speak once, but he did see him, yeah.
The idea that Coltrane intersected with Malcolm, because in, I guess historically we think of these people as existing in the same time period, but their intersection was brief. And I was just thinking as Coltrane is sort of like this icon for this kind of music, how in that interview, he doesn't like making these explicit political statements. And I think about that in our music a lot, like how much should you let it speak for yourself and how much of it should you speak overtly? And there's a song on the record, which actually, I don't know if this was something that you wanted to address later, but there's a song on the record that actually will put me in danger, like real danger. And that's the song that I feel the need to kind of stop the set in the middle of and talk about, because you need to have that preface. I'm also trying to leave a paper trail in case I get killed or something. So,
well, look, he does say some things in that interview that I know almost by heart because I've heard it a billion times. He said he thought musicians were after some kind of truth. And to me, that's a political statement.
Yeah.
Okay. He also, Frank Kosky challenges him. Some rock says, you're ripping him off. And John Coltrane says, well, you know what? There might be something to that because I listened to John Gilmore. It didn't seem like John Coltrane wanted to make people feel uncomfortable about the stuff they asked him.
Sure.
But he did want to level with them.
I think that's a really tight balancing act, and I find that really admirable. Because it's, you know, and you know this because you've been on both sides of it, just the process of doing press or the process of talking about your music, you want to be real, like regardless of how you articulate that. And he was, and it seems like, especially in that interview, he's just so good at being real, even if he's speaking kind of in a circular or roundabout way. And I think that's really cool.
Well, look, you know, a lot of his music, I mean, he did the Johnny Hartman thing, ballads with some words, but a lot of it he's not using words. So he writes a song like Alabama, which I think the title is very important, but he's, you can feel Dr. King's cadence, right? There's,
oh yeah.
You know right what? So I think he's not trying to, what's the word? Obfuscate, you know, trying to hide. I don't feel he's like Mr. Wittgenstein and like, whoa, I've painted myself in a corner and I got to talk my way out of this. I just think he's trying to be consistent with,
yeah,
with the, like he said, after some kind of truth kind of trip. I want to play, I didn't say the rest of the songs. There was a Shift in Paradigms from Crane. There was Samuel Locke Ward with No Speech. Mode Omen with MOC. Part of their MOA to OMOD. Big piece. Steve Abercrombie. Fresh Fit. Wow, I played Stevie Abercrombie twice. Well, you know, only 19 years of doing this, people. Fuck up. That's okay. He's good enough. Kim Salmon and Spencer P. Jones. We lost Spencer to cancer. That's why we make these records, right? You never know when you're last. And like John Coltrane, right? I think he knew those last. You know, I read something in Art Pepper's, but why is he blowing his brains out trying to keep up with these young people? I don't think it was that at all. Art Pepper, I think, who was actually born in Pedro. I think what you missed was he knew he was running out of time. He had to get in every tune he could. And then finally,
Go ahead, Carl. Oh no, I didn't want to cut you off. I heard an anecdote. Charles Davis told me this, the saxophone player, that when Coltrane was recording one of his last sessions, he actually had a clock up on the wall, and he was watching the clock as he improvised. And on that's the record that got released as Stellar Regions, and that's the reason everything on that record's like 5 minutes long. It's because he wanted to keep it short.
Yeah, that's released after him, and some of them just have numbers; they don't even have titles, right? Yeah, he was trying to get, I mean, I heard about his tour in Japan where he was doing jams during the day. Kira Sakata went to get his record signed after the Hiroshima gig. He was pracking after the, well, you know, Miles talks about that shit. Finally, Jim's Run from Grex. I want to play Icky here.
Thank you. seven fights with a young man. No one ever 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 fights with a young man.
Pitchfork.
For Pebo Show, last music for this edition. We were talking about cancel culture, people. It's not a new phenomenon. It goes way back. Okay. Icky, which is a pet's name, Greg's kind of mascot. Huh? Well, enough to inspire a tune. And then the Hawk out of Iowa City with Pete's thing. Knee Jerk from Pussycat and the Dirty Johnsons. Gentlemen, One Equals, from PNDC and Housework, Serbia. And finally, Grex with Good Night. I thought Good Night was good closer, you know. I was thinking of the Lead Belly song, Good Night, Irene.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, and so the paper trail. You know, I know D. Boone. I remember one time we were playing a gig in New Orleans at Tulane, and D. Boone had these stickers that he was giving out after we got done, and you had to lick them. I mean, they were like big postage stamps in a way. But these dudes got really pissed at him. And do you worry about that? Like your music making a statement that's going to make somebody physically want to come after you?
Well, this is please stop me if this goes on. But my so the song on the record, Criminal, it was written to talk about the Duterte administration in the Philippines. My aunt was named Miriam Defensor Santiago. And she actually ran against Duterte in the last election, and she was technically the winner of the 92 election. She was just never able to take office because of voter fraud. And she passed away, and then it came to light that Duterte was exercising what he believed to be his rights to extrajudicial killings. It got really dangerous.
Yeah.
And so I felt the need to speak to that. The issue being there has been... He's had this habit of kind of going after people, or his supporters have had this habit of going after people who articulate any sort of dissent. And in the Philippines, I've classically had to have had bodyguards. And I'm in America. There's no real protection here. There's always a minor danger something's going to happen. It's like I've been calling it a non-zero chance. So I'm a little worried. A little worried.
Well, man. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Well, I hope you stay safe, and I hope people aren't assholes about this and let you do your music and your art. And, yeah, I've heard statements by this guy. You know, people go searching for shortcuts. There's no shortcuts. You know, putting in a guy who doesn't respect the law isn't really going to fix shit, people. That's my opinion on it. I'm glad you got balls out. Bravery to do that, Carl, truly. What's the next plan? I know you can't tour right now.
I think we're going to take a step back and try to actually figure out, give ourselves some air to kind of work on the record, because I think we've been in this, so to speak, rat wheel for like 10 years where we're just kind of writing, touring, and while we're touring, we're writing the material for the next record. I kind of just want to see what happens if we can breathe. And this seems like a good time to do that.
Yeah. Shuffle up the deck.
Yeah.
And where can people find you on the internet?
So we're at, our website is www.grexsounds.com. And then we're at grex.bandcamp.com.
Yeah. And, you know, the Fridays, the Bandcamp people have been giving all the bones to the bands on Fridays, right?
I do appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, there's been a lot of internet kind of ways for people to do, and most of them have been jive, and I think the Bandcamp people are the first ones that have really been fair, kind of fair on this. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for doing what you're doing. Whatever comes out of this next one, when you get it done, when you come back on the show...
Oh, for sure. It's my honor.
Yeah, big time, man. When you asked me to do this, I was like, yeah, right. As soon as we got a thing, man. Thank you so much, Carl. And plus, I love your guitar playing. It's beautiful.
Oh, that's a huge... I'll have to stew on that. I appreciate that so much.
Okay, and tell your band they're good, too. People, it's been September 7, 2020. This is the Wapibo Show. Happy Labor Day. Keep your powder dry.